what irritates me about our industry is that there are 1,000 different ways to be successful. And when agents act like there's only one way, that's where I have to draw the line and go, no. And I will jump on somebody else's Facebook comment or even on a podcast. I've done it before where it's like, no, there is no magical one way. There's many ways to be successful in this industry. And I think we all need to remember that.
Welcome to Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell. I'm Mark Dolan. This show is about lessons that hold up under pressure, trust-based selling, leadership, discipline, and the real-world habits that create results without turning you into a hype machine. Today's guest is Bob Thompson, a 20-year real estate agent and growth coach, published author, and specialist in REO and short sales. Bob's not shy about doing things differently. No signs in yards, no open houses, no gifts, and he'll tell you exactly why. But what makes this episode worth your time isn't just tactics, it's the grit behind it. Bob's had a heart attack and he's a bypass survivor, and he went completely broke in 2018, then rebuilt. He's the kind of guy who talks straight, doesn't play games, and believes you can be upset, feel it fully, and then get back up and move forward again. If you're in real estate, sales, leadership, or you're in a tough season personally, this conversation is going to give you both perspective and practical takeaways you can apply immediately. So let's get into it. Welcome to the show today.
Nice to meet you.
So you said you worked up in Newport News area or the Hampton area in Virginia. So introduce yourself to the audience. Let them know a little bit about where you work and a little bit about your backstory.
Okay, so like I said, my name is Bob Thompson. I am a 20-year real estate agent and growth coach. I work in what is essentially Hampton Roads, Virginia, also known as Tidewater, Virginia. You know, they tried to rebrand it once or twice. You know how that goes. So the best way to say would be probably Virginia Beach, Norfolk area. Everybody pretty much knows where Norfolk is. Obviously, big shipyards, all of that. Very, very, very big military area. So All of that area. Essentially, I actually got into real estate. I started buying rental property, and this was probably 2003. I was a chemist for 9 years and worked 12-hour night shifts and absolutely hated it. Was just not fit for multiple bosses and being told what to do all the time. So bought some rental property and found that I enjoyed the hunt and the process of the buying of the real estate itself way more than I did being a landlord, and got my real estate license, worked real estate part-time as I continued my chemist career. My ex-wife and I put together a 3-year plan. We got it done in 2 years, and I walked out of the chemical plant in April of 2007 and never looked back, and still one of the proudest accomplishments of my life.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like the makings of a top producing salesperson, because we get unlimited freedom and creativity in this business. And it sounds like that's what you thrive on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at this point, I thrive on the fact that I'm going to do it my way and it works for me. It's not for everybody. What irritates me about our industry is that there are 1,000 different ways to be successful. And when agents act like there's only one way, that's where I have to draw the line and go, no. And I will jump on somebody else's Facebook comment or even on a podcast. I've done it before where it's like, no, there is no magical one way. There's many ways to be successful in this industry. And I think we all need to remember that.
Awesome. Awesome. So, and I love to ask this question because it's so meaningful to me, is that when you were growing up, did you think about being in real estate or even think about being in sales at the time growing up? Or is that something that came into your life as an adult?
It came into my life as an adult. As a child, there was three things, and this is not a joke. There's three things I wanted to be. I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be president of the United States. And I wanted to be an NFL running back. Well, I very quickly discovered that at 5'9" and zero athletic ability, clearly running back wasn't going to happen. And then I spent a good portion of my 20s, quite honestly, pretty much being a bum. You know, went to community college a couple of times and just kind of played in a heavy metal band and kind of, you know, I don't think I got useful again until I was probably 26 or 27. So
that seems to be a story for a lot of people. You know, it's interesting to me looking, you know, at, you know, looking back after 40 years at our industry is that most people didn't grow up thinking I want to get into the real estate business, or they didn't think I want to get into sales. It's something that came to them when they decided that they wanted to start earning a living, or they wanted to start making a lot of money. I mean, to me, it was, I had the opportunity to make a lot of money, and I wasn't prepared to do anything else that I thought would earn it. And so real estate seemed like a way for me to go that it might be possible, but it wasn't something that I had planned. And so you talk a lot about, you know, doing it your way. Talk a little bit about how you've designed your business to do it in a way that is interesting to you.
So you have to remember, and you were just talking about it, what got me into real estate is I was working in the lab. Now, I had previously worked on the plant and I worked my way into the lab. So I didn't actually have a chemical degree. I basically was smart enough to where they put me in the lab and they started training me. So I'm sitting in freshman chemistry, I'm 30, 31 at that point, surrounded by 22-year-olds, and I'm playing with a Bunsen burner. I've got my own lab coat with my name on it, all my own supplies, and that's when the light bulb went off. It was like, okay, I cannot do this for the next 40 years of my life. I made decent money, but I was like, I just can't do it anymore. So for me, doing it my own way means, you know, and again, there's a thousand ways to do it. I don't do open houses. I don't put signs in the yard, and I don't do real estate gifts. And I have no problem having this conversation. I've gotten fussed at over it, and my opinion never changes, and I will answer it the same exact way every time. And what works for me is leaning into who I am, which means you're going to get the truth all of the time. Whether it's gentle or not is immaterial, because you need somebody that's going to guide and lead you. I am not an order taker. It doesn't exist. So for me, signs in the yard, perfect example. We have 1,000 different websites that our properties are on, and that's how everybody buys them now. We don't need to put them on, you know, the days of driving by and looking at them doesn't really exist anymore. It's a feel-good thing. In other words, 99% of what we do is not a physical job. It's a, you know, what do you know up here, or who you're learning from? We can't showcase that. There's no way to do it. If my mechanic's fixing my car, I could walk over there and he's physically changing it and doing what he needs to do. And that's wonderful. But we can't do that. So I just basically took away the illusion, and I explained it to my clients right from Jump Street. That sign in the yard is only for me. It creates business for me. It shows people that I'm working. And I finally just broke down and quit doing them. I just don't do them at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's a pretty unconventional. I mean, I don't think I've heard anybody else advocate for not having signs except for homeowners that really don't want people in the neighborhood to know that the house is on the market. And I agree with you. The days of driving by homes looking for them to be for sale is, you know, that went away probably 20 years ago. They're searching online for it now, or on their phones and devices and that kind of thing. Since you're so unconventional, I guess the question would be, you know, how do you get your clients today?
Most of my clients is sphere of influence, and always has been. Even if it comes with, I get a lot of, well, Bob's a little rough around the edges, but he's very good at his job. And I'm absolutely okay with that. And I think part of that fact is with the no signs and the no open houses is you're getting the truth, or at least you're getting my truth anyway. And I would rather just be honest with you than play the game of pretend, because that's what a lot of what we've been taught to do is pretend. The same way with open houses. Now, if a house is vacant, that's a little bit different. But in what other world do you live in? Do you allow strangers to walk through your home? I mean, think about that for a second. You wouldn't on a random Saturday open up your house to strangers. And yes, okay, they may or may not come with an agent. They supposedly may be pre-qualified, but you don't know that. I mean, even Ryan Leaf, you know, who has had a notorious history with prescription drugs and got himself squared away. He said he used to go to open houses, and granted, this was in California, and he would rifle through medicine cabinets and things of that nature. So again, to me, if you think about it, if I came to you and said, you know, I'd really like to open up your house to strangers for 2 hours this weekend, what do you think? And then, and for you to agree to that, it's just like, it doesn't make good sense. Now, again, I tell my new agents, open houses are good to possibly pick up business, but it doesn't, my opinion, it doesn't sell the house. In other words, no. Very, very rarely, you know, does somebody walk in and go, oh, wow, I really like this house. This is the one I want to buy. And number two, they would have made a regular appointment anyway. So what difference does it make? So it's again, it's the creating the illusion that look at, oh, wow, Bob's out here on a Sunday for 2 hours. That was awfully nice of him. He's really trying to sell the house. That's not selling the house. Pricing it correctly, you know as well as I do, pricing the house correctly sells the house. Marketing sells the house. And understanding time on market. If the time on market is 60 days, there's not a whole lot I can do magically that's going to get it sold before 60 days. Now, I may get it in 30 days or 40 days, and if it's priced correctly, probably even sooner. But realistically, if the average day on market is 60 days, more than likely, that's what's going to happen. And an open house is not going to help or help that in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. 40 years ago, well, I think most new people that get into the business are told to go get open houses for exactly the reason that you shared, is that it's a good opportunity for the agent to pick up new clients and new business if they don't have anything. And I believe that that's true. And pretty quickly, you know, I sort of moved in the direction where I did not want to hold open houses. And I was honest with the sellers at the time. I said, you know, I can sit in your home on a Saturday for, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 hours, and maybe, you know, 2, 5, 10 clients may come in, or maybe nobody will come in. On the other hand, I can be in my office and I can talk with 50, 60, 70 people on the phone that I know that are actually out there looking at property and talking to people that way. So would you rather me talk with 70 people about your home in the 4 hours, or maybe talk with 12? I mean, and that was my truth at the time. Which do you think is going to help you sell your home faster, 10 or 12 or 70?
Yeah. And here's the thing. I don't have the temperament and the personality. Like, you could see it on my face that I don't want to be there. Now, if I get somebody else to do it, and we all know agents that kill it in open houses, and more power to them. And that's what, again, I go back to. Some agents are just phenomenal at them. They got all the signage and they make it an event. And you can see the real joy on their face of doing it. They love to be there and talk to the folks and do all of that. That they're leaning into what they do well and who they are. I learned very quickly, you can tell on my face I'm miserable and I don't want to be here. And you can't. And if I fake it, it comes across as fake, which means I'm not going to pick up a new buyer. So there's absolutely no point for me to be there. I learned very early, it just didn't work for me. And I would rather, again, be honest and tell my clients that. And if they really, really wanted one, then I can certainly bring in an agent to do it. But, you know, my initial response is going to be, there's no point. Now, if it's vacant, by all means, again, it's a great opportunity for a new agent to get business, certainly, or at least figure out if that's something they want to pursue. You know, so I'm not going to say it's wrong. I'm saying it's wrong for me.
For you. Yeah. And that's really an important way. I agree with you that there are many, many, many ways to be successful in the real estate business. I started off new and found a niche working on expired listings. I specialized in homes that were listed with other people where they weren't successful. I mean, I knew they wanted to sell. I knew that they had signed a contract with another agent and that agent had failed. And if they were a real seller, I was going to be there to offer them, you know, a solution to get their home sold. And that worked for me. But there's other people that built their businesses on open houses, and that's not you and that's not me. So I can appreciate that. You said that you coach people as well. Talk a little bit about how you're coaching agents today and what makes that a good fit for you.
Well, I think what makes it a good fit is after 2 heart attacks and a bypass, when I recovered and started working again, I wanted to start giving back. You know, I spent the better part of the first 15 years of my business just with my head down, pretty much doing my own thing. You know, I was on the big power team early on, as a lot of us agents are. Then I went solo and kind of did my own thing. So I really wanted to give back. And I saw a lot of the coaching sphere where it's the same old, same old. And I'm just going to call it what it is, and I'll have a conversation with them. It's the Tom Ferries. It's the, who's the pop, Brian Buffini. It's peddling the same stuff as they were peddling 30 years ago. And that doesn't work. One of the things that I love about coaching is when my agents are successful, to me, that's the victory. I mean, when you see somebody that's doing what needs to be done and getting the accountability, and then after a few, you know, they start really killing it and doing well, you know, that's the important thing. That's what I love about it. And again, going back into what are you good at and what are you comfortable with and what can you use from your past to, you know, fit into what you're doing today, especially if you don't have the experience that I have. So what could you do as a, if you've only been in the industry three months and you're competing against me, well, I can just walk in and go, I got 20 years, I got this, blah, blah, blah. So for them, I'm teaching them to, okay, well, you were in finance for a while. Okay, we'll use that as part of your background. Lean into what makes you strong and what makes you positive. If you have an upbeat personality, if you're a coaching type of person already, if you're a technical person, then come from that perspective, which is, you know, I may not smile pretty and I may not get all super excited, but I'm technically gifted. So you and I are going to go through this house with a fine tooth comb, and I've got a background in contracting or whatever, and I understand how things work, and I can, you know, so I can help you from that perspective. Not everybody's going to be a fit for us as clients. It just, that's the way it goes.
Yeah. That's very wise information to share. I mean, and I'm hearing so much about being an individual. I mean, you're an individual, and all agents that get into the business have different strengths. And if they try to be somebody else, they can't possibly be someone else. That's so working on their strength is a good way to do it. Are you working with agents as a coach within your own organization, or are you coaching people outside?
I do both. Now, obviously, I work for LGI Legacy Group International, which, of course, is powered by EXP. So I am one of their growth coaches, and I have my own clients. And then I have coaching clients on the outside that obviously I would love to bring them within the fold, but if they're not ready for that or want to do that, that's fine too. I can still coach them. And that's a perfect example of sometimes we don't want to do things that we're not good at. I have never been a great recruiter. I'm trying to get better at it, but it's never been my thing. So I like my client, you know, there's no sense in spending hours trying to learn something that you just absolutely stink at. I would rather you lean into the things that you're good at and improve them, because those other things you can either, if you're successful, you can throw money at it later. Like I, again, with my heart attack and bypass, you know, I'm not exactly a big fan of cutting grass and all of that. But I'd rather make the money and then pay somebody else to do that. So I think it's important to lean in who you are. I cannot stand a cookie cutter real estate agent, or, and I'm weird this way, and I'm not going to pretend I'm not. The jokes that we get from, well, you know, real estate agents like to drink wine every day because we're the hardest working people in the world and it's the toughest job in the world. No, it's not. Okay. I've worked in 100 degree heat. I've worked in 10 degree weather. That's hard. That's tough. You know, scraping concrete for 12 hours is not my idea of a good time. I've done that. So as far as I'm concerned, every single day that I get up to do this job and am able to be successful at it, I'm happy. So I don't like the generic, well, you know, we don't spend any time with our children. We don't do this and we drink all the time. I hate that generic crap. I mean, I get it and know to some extent it's just kind of silly, ha-ha. But I think it sets a bad light. And I quite honestly, I think it's ridiculous. So I don't like to see that. I like to see everybody be who they really are.
Awesome. Well, let's shift gears a little bit, because I know a part of your story in 2018, you know, your words, not mine, is that you lost everything or you went broke in that. But can you give everybody a little bit of a background as to what happened then? And then let's talk about how you worked yourself out of it.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you get a little too cocky or you're doing really well, sometimes you need to be smacked upside the head. The Lord has a good way of smiting thee when you're getting a little out of line.
Yeah.
So 2017, I was killing it. I did 70 deals as a solo agent by myself, no help. I'm just running and doing my thing. And then rolled into 2018, bought a new car, bought an RV, living good. And then May or June of 2018, I had heart attack number one, quit smoking, obviously. It's a great way to quit smoking, let me tell you. And then had heart attack number two the day after my birthday, October 13th. And then at that point, they went in, they had already done the stents and that didn't work. And they basically were like, well, we're done. We're going to go in and do a bypass. And what was supposed to be a double bypass was a quadruple bypass. So I thought I was prepared financially if this was to happen. I truly believe that. I was incredibly wrong. And I went through my savings, my credit cards, everything. In the span of a week and a half, Wells Fargo canceled my bank account, canceled my credit card, and repoed my vehicle. And by the end of 2018, it was completely flat broke. I mean, my father had to pay to get my car out of repo, and I had a buddy of mine that had to pay my mortgage. I was like broke, and I don't mean like a little bit broke. I mean like broke. What I learned was I was upfront and honest with all my creditors, and I really thought they would give me an opportunity to catch back up because I had a history. I had good credit. I had paid my bills on time. And I'm like, guys, this is what's going on. And you know how it is in real estate. You can kind of point to the future and go, okay, this is going to happen next month. And then I'm going to have this closing over here. And then I'm going to, you know, I get through the 3 weeks of the rehab and all of the stuff. I'll start working again. Nobody cared. They shut me down. I just went completely flat broke. Gone.
I don't know that every agent has had that kind of a meltdown. After 40 years, I've been through several cycles. I mean, I remember going through the 1992-1993 cycle where everything went to hell because I was in the business back then. And that was the first time. I mean, that it took me 10 years to work myself out of that hole that I got myself into in the late 80s with the overspending and doing all of those different things. And when I entered into the downturn of 2007-2008, I was pretty cocky because I'd already been through a down market before and I had saved money and I was prepared for it. And, and I had learned that when the market goes south, I would do a little bit better because of the longevity and the skills that I had built up over the time. But there was one big mistake that I had at the time. Now I owned the company and I had 32 salespeople working for me and a bunch of staff that had not saved money and had not prepared for the downturn. And so when the downturn took place, so many of them failed. You know, so many of them failed. And I put I put all the money that I'd saved back into keeping the company going for the next few years until things turned around. So I vowed I would never do that again. So, and thankfully, you know, to this point, I haven't done that as well. So were there any, you know, specific things that you learned as you came out of that, that you can share with people that might be going through a downturn financially in their business? How do they turn it around?
So for me, the biggest thing that I learned strictly on a personal level is if you're failing, if you're hurting, if you need help, ask for it. Let people know. Because I didn't tell a single soul that I was going broke. Like I saw it happening in real time and I never bothered to tell anybody until it was too late. That's the biggest thing that I learned the hard way is you haven't lived until you've had a conversation with your father telling him you need to borrow one of his vehicles. And he's like, well, where's yours at? I was like, well, that's the thing, Dad. They came and got it. So if I had told my father what was going on, my father would have been able to make a small $800 payment to keep the car payment going forward instead of the almost $3,000 that he had to put out to get the car back. And if you don't tell people what's going on in your world, at least your close people, then you're suffering by yourself. And that's ultimately where I dropped the ball. Not only am I in the middle of cardiac rehab, I had to stay with my father for several weeks because I lived alone. So I'm back in my father's house at 46 years of age. I can barely walk. My chest has been split wide open. And I don't have any opportunities and I can't get out of the house. And I haven't done a very good job of having other streams of income, which means, you know, if I work, I get paid. If I don't work, I don't get paid. And that was a problem. But I think for me, the biggest thing was letting the people that I love and care about know what was going on. So then they can at least let me know that it could get better. And number two, I think just, and I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it, is just not quit. Understand that this is not permanent. And if I keep my head down, I will recover and keep moving forward. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just not, I've got to be patient, which means, okay, come by January, you know, if you figure I had the bypass, I got the heart attack number two, October 13th. I had the bypass. They had to wait a week. And then I had the 3 weeks of rehab. And then, of course, you're not exactly up and running and leaving the house. But I reminded my folks and my Facebook people and all that, that I was coming back, and come January, things started to turn around, and it was just, okay, well, Bob's returning. He can get back to work. The biggest thing is sometimes you can be doing everything right and stuff just sucks. And that's, you know, it's not that you're not grinding hard enough, or, you know, I hate the, okay, well, if you're getting up at 6 a.m. and you're failing, then you need to get up at 5 a.m. No, that's not it. Sometimes you're just not, you haven't broken through the ceiling yet. It's the classic, what's the old story of the guy that's has a gold claim and then gives up, and then like a foot down after he sold the claim, he finds right. The gold. Sometimes things just take time, and you throw in a little imposter syndrome, and you throw in a little negativity from other people, it's very easy to break or shift 15 different ways, because then you get out of your own head and you start listening to everybody else, or you genuinely believe that you're just not working hard enough. And I don't believe that's the case. 9 out of 10 times, I refuse to accept that. I think sometimes you just have to be patient and keep your head down and keep grinding, and you will break through. That's about the best I can do with it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me, what I'm hearing from you is a lot about a pretty healthy and strong mindset. Would you say that that's something that is innate to you, and you brought that with you to the business, or did you have to learn techniques or things later on that helped you to develop that mindset?
I think I learned it as I was. My best answer to that is that I learned it the hard way from changing jobs and listening and talking to other people. In other words, we're surrounded by so much negativity. I can remember as far back as leaving the grocery store to go work at the chemical plant, and my boss is complaining that I'm leaving, and hey, we could have put you in the grocery manager program. You know, okay, so you're telling me that the best I can do for the rest of my life is produce manager. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but there's more I want to accomplish. And everybody wants to drag you down and bring you down. So I found myself very quickly listening to a lot of Les Brown and stuff like that. Some of that, having that positive mindset and that positive attitude of, okay, I can do this and be successful regardless of what folks that aren't as successful as me, or sometimes people are just mad because you're moving on and they want you to stay so they could be in the same stuck location with you. So the mindset took some time. And every time I ever changed jobs, I would hear it over and over again. When I left the chemical plant in 2007, everybody thought I was nuts. I was making about 45 grand a year, decent money, had health insurance and all that. And they basically were like, well, this is the greatest job you're ever going to have. You can stay here another 15 years. Well, that's not what I wanted to do. I rolled out into a recession. You remember 2007, 2008, 2009, doubled my income my first year in real estate in 2008. And it just reminded me once again that you've got to believe, ultimately, you've got to believe in yourself, and sometimes you've got to create that mindset that you are capable. And sometimes you've got to listen to other people tell you that you can do it. Even if it's not anybody you know, it's Les Brown or Tony Robbins, or me, whatever you're into. And I still use those techniques to this day. There's at least once a month where I believe I'm never going to sell another house again. I can't explain it. It makes no sense. When things get slow, you know, like that time period where, okay, everything's been buttoned down and you got to close where you're going to go, you're not, and the new stuff hasn't quite bubbled up yet, or like it's getting ready. With every, at least once a month, I'm like, all right, I got to go get a job at Walmart. I'm done. I know it's stupid. And sometimes I'll go and listen to Les Brown. I'll even listen to my own stupid podcasts that I've done and be like, well, damn, Bob, maybe you ought to take your own advice and shut your mouth and quit your crying and get back to work. So I think you can definitely create the mindset. That's my long-winded answer to that. So sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, and that's, you know, it's good. I remember coming into the real estate business 40 plus years ago, and I had never been exposed to Les Brown or Tony Robbins or anybody that had a positive mindset. I mean, I came out of a pretty negative childhood, and it took a lot to turn my mindset around. And I remember, you know, learning about affirmations. And I thought for sure that I had never used affirmations before, until one day I was making some eggs on the stove and I dropped the fork into the eggs. I was scrambling eggs and I dropped the fork into the eggs and I said, boy, that was stupid. And in a split second, I said, there's an affirmation. That wasn't stupid. It was a mistake. I just dropped the fork in the eggs. But I had been talking to myself so negatively for so long without thinking that it really worked against me. And so I love to share that story with people, is that what we tell ourselves really makes a difference. And it sounds like that's a good part of the way that you've worked through some downtimes yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you think about it, it sounds, your initial reaction to that is like, well, that's just silly. You know, that's got nothing, but it really makes a big difference, I believe. I mean, obviously there's a difference between blind faith and believing in yourself. Like, I know at 53 that I'm not going to start a band tomorrow and be the biggest rock and roll star of all time. Okay. I'm not going to get on the field and go play football. Those things are gone. That's different. That's, you know, there's a difference between being delusional and having belief in yourself. Two way different things. I mean, clearly, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers are not calling Bob Thompson to be a running back. So if I was to go out and train for that, that wouldn't be very smart. Now, could I train myself for better health if I wanted to do a marathon or something like that? That's different. That's something that I could eventually, with proper training, I could do that. But if I delusionally thought the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to call me, then somebody needs to, you know, I need to go see a doctor, because clearly I'm not thinking right. So there's a difference there. But I do, but I think positive attitude, I think it makes a huge difference. I truly believe that.
Awesome. Awesome. So going to switch a little bit. You have a story that talks about the question, how many houses have you sold? Can you tell the story and the lesson behind that?
Oh, yeah. I tell all of my new agents this story, and I love it. Oh, this is, so 2018, you know, I went full time in 2017. I kind of floated around with a couple of really bad brokers. We've all been there. We've all had, you know, crappy team leaders and whatnot. I joined a big power team locally in 2018. About the first month in, I'm sorry, 2007, so in 2007, I went solo. So in 2008, I joined the big power team. So I had been floating around as a part-time agent for a couple of years. I had sold a few houses, but I had brought on a listing that wasn't selling. And my broker, who was also the team leader, was trying to explain to me that the house was overpriced. And I'm sitting there and I'm arguing with him. And you know as well as I do as an agent, 9 out of 10 times the house is overpriced. Let's not kid ourselves. So he finally snaps and looks at me and goes, how many houses have you sold? And I started stuttering and fluttering because, let's be honest, I didn't have a good answer. And he was like, why are you arguing with me? He was like, my name is on the door. He was like, this is my team. He was like, who knows best, you or me? And I swear to God, the light bulb went on. And it's just like, oh, good Lord, he's right. So what that reminded me of, and what I tell everybody is, you know, we always have people that know better than us in something. It's like, I'm not going to argue with my mechanic. Now, I may go get a second opinion, but I'm not going to tell him how to do the job. And we all do it. It's the same as me as a football fan complaining on what plays the coach is running on a Sunday. And think about how silly that is. I never made it past direct football, and I'm going to yell at the TV and argue that the coach is doing it wrong when I don't know a thing. And that's the equivalent of me telling my broker that I know what I'm doing when I've been in the industry less than 3 years and I'm clueless. And just the way he snapped at me, if he'd have been nice about it, wouldn't have gone through, and I'd have probably been out of the industry. Just, I know what a hardhead I am. And yeah. it just the light bulb came on. It was like, oh, okay. So that means in all that we do, and we have people that are, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not the best. There is no, least of all, an intangible business like real estate. There are many ways to do it, and there are many best. You know, I don't think I'm the best because there's agents that can probably work circles around me in certain things that have ran their business probably a lot better than I did, that have created massive power teams or just kind of have a little niche that they do. And we can learn from everybody, and you're never too good to stop learning and listening and paying attention. And I think that's important, and regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I love that. So a couple more questions before we go. You know, the first one is that in the market that we're in today, you know, a lot of agents have been struggling, and so they're going through a hard season. You know, you also coach people. What do you share with an agent that is going through a tough season? What would you tell them to do over the next, you know, what's the non-negotiables for the next 30 or 90 days to get them back on track?
The first one, I think, is number one, and this is going to sound a little egotistical, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I don't know how otherwise to say it. We get a lot of agents that are floating around in the ether. In other words, they've joined a team, they've been told they're going to get this training and they're going to do this, and then they suffer and get nothing done for 6 to 9 months. And then their attitude is, well, I've been in the industry 9 months and I haven't sold or bought anything and I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, so first of all, you're now coaching with me or you've joined my team or whatever. Let's eliminate the first 6 to 9 months of your career because it doesn't count. If you're walking around in the desert, don't count that as you've been in the industry. You're new. So don't walk around with the, I've been doing this for 9 months and I got nothing to show for it. No, you're new. We're starting all over from day one. So number one, don't assume because you were wandering the desert that you did anything wrong and you suck. That's not the case. You got lied to. You were told, let's be honest, in our industry, you were promised leads. You were promised this. You were promised that. And then you're not converting the leads because nobody bothered to teach you how to actually convert a lead. You know, what I always say is, you know, leads do you no good if you don't know how to convert them. They're yeah. completely worthless. They can make you feel good because right. you're making phone calls, but if you're stumbling and fumbling, it ain't going to work. So to me, that's one very big non-negotiable. And I don't care if it's whatever group that you're with when you finally find your people, because it may not be my people. It may be whatever that may be, that's when you're new. That's your starting date. It's not what you've done in the past. That's your starting date. So that's a big one for me. The other one, I think, is you've got to immerse yourself in accountability and training. And I think that comes down to the sphere of influence and putting the work in. You know, script practice, I think, is a massive one. And it doesn't mean that you have to be cookie cutter. You have to be cookie cutter to learn the script. Then you can adjust it to what's best for you, what that sounds like. So when you start the script, hello, this is Bob Thompson. I saw that we're interested in purchasing a home. How can I help you with that? And then depending on what they say, then you can adjust your style. And a lot of agents are just like, well, I don't want to fumble and stumble and sound silly. Okay, first of all, that person doesn't know you. So if you stumble and you hang up, they're not going to remember who you are anyway. What difference does it make? A lot of agents get wrapped up in the process of, if I post too much on Facebook, if I bother my people too much, they're not going to want to talk to me. Trust me. Somebody will tell you if you're bothering them too much, and most of us aren't that important and ain't nobody paying that much attention to us anyway. It's the whole, well, when I walk into a room, I feel like everybody's looking at you. No, they're not. Sorry, but they're not. Unless you're Tom Cruise or supermodel, nobody really cares that much. So you kind of have to get over yourself a little bit and keep moving forward. So those are a couple of things and belief in that you can do this. And sometimes an agent is failing because of their personal beliefs and not because they're not getting good training. And you have to figure out what the pain point is, what the stumbling block is. If your imposter syndrome is so great, and much like you said earlier, if you've been told all your life that you suck and you can't do it, we've got to fix that first. Then we can get into the training. And sometimes that's the block. Sometimes you may be at an organization where you're getting excellent training and you don't need me in any way, shape, or form. It may just be that you need me to go, no, you actually can do this. You're not stupid. You're not a failure. Let's walk through and figure out that piece of it. Like the other day, I've got an agent that's been dying to get back into the gym. And I kept reminding her, the process is just get into the car and go to the gym. I'm not asking you to do a 45-minute workout. I'm saying literally get dressed, walk out of the door, and go to the gym. Even if you walk in the door, get a drink of water, and leave, you started the process anew and again. To me, that's everything. That's starting it. And you can build from that because, okay, well, you went there. Now you go back. Now go jump on the treadmill for 10 minutes, okay? It's little micro incremental successes I think a lot of agents miss out on. And they look at experienced agents and they just assume we just magically did that overnight. It took, you know, none of us get that successful that fast. And the final thing that I would say to agents, and I know I went off on a tangent there and I apologize, is don't compare contrast. Everybody's market is different. Everybody's strength and opportunity is different. I've lived in the same area my entire life. So I automatically have a leg up with any new agent in my area because I can go, by the way, I've been doing this for 20 years and I've lived here all my life. I could be the worst agent in the world, but somebody's going to think I'm an expert simply because seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no way to prove otherwise.
Yeah. There is a lot of good stuff there. I really appreciate what you shared. It's so interesting that as much as we started out with you saying, you know, I do it my way, but you did a lot of the same things that everyone that is successful in this business has done. You talked about mindset, you talked about affirmations, you talked about script practice, you talked about accountability, you talked about training, you talked about all of the fundamental time-tested principles that make people successful, and you just made it yours. I really love what you shared there. So as we finish up, can you share with everybody again what markets you work in and where they can reach you so the people that have listened to our show today can reach you if they're out working in that marketplace?
Awesome. Yeah, I am in Hampton Roads, Virginia. So essentially Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Virginia. I am, of course, with LGI Legacy Group International, powered by EXP, of course. And they can reach me at essentially two platforms, bobtheagent.com and onehourrealestateagent.com.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. I had a good time. I hope some people learned a few things. And I'm old, so if anybody's got any questions, I'm easy to find on all the socials at Bob the Agent, and they can call me, send me an email, whatever. I'm always happy to help out.
All right, that was Bob Thompson. Now here's the takeaway. You don't need to copy the crowd to win. You need standards, self-awareness, and the willingness to do the work when nobody's clapping. And if you've been knocked down financially, emotionally, physically, this is your reminder that you can be honest about how hard it is without making that your identity. Feel it, own it, then move forward again on purpose. If this episode helped you, follow or subscribe to Time Tested Mastery Life Lessons Sell. Send it to one agent or salesperson who needs a straight talk reset. And if you want more trust-based selling and mastery training, connect with me at timetestedmastery.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Dolan. See you next time.